We're doomed, we're saved.
The BioRevolution Podcast.
Your hosts, Luise von Stechow
and Andreas Horchler. Welcome to We're Doomed, We're Saved. Welcome, Easy.
Hello.
As the new year just begins while we're recording this, maybe for you, like for others, with promises to improve, to quit smoking, to quit alcohol, to get in shape, to stay young and attractive. So basically to create and become a new me. We thought we'd be calling this episode, therefore, New Year, Old Me, No Biohacks Needed. So while there are real shortcuts and fake abbreviations to reach some of those goals, there's also traditional ways. And we'll try to distinguish what's worth trying and what to avoid. And as always, Easy, you brought quotes.
Yes, I brought some quotes today from a very inspiring figure, at least if you believe some bigger names in Hollywood. I think he is like an influence on people like Justin Bieber and the Kardashians.
Okay.
So if you're in these realms, he might be your go-to person. And I think for many, many other more, let's say, regular people as well. And he's the Dutch Iceman, Wim Hof, who came up with a breathing technique, like kind of hyperventilation that is then followed by immersing yourself in ice cold water. And this supposedly has a lot of good physiological outcomes, disease prevention, makes you stronger, better, healthier, and maybe also even live longer. And he said, you have the ability to control your own physiology, which is what he's trying to prove. And in part is also capable of proving, but we're going into the details of that in a second. And I want to bring another quote from Norbert Wiener. He's a mathematician, American scientist, who is the father of a field called cybernetics, which I had actually not heard of, even though I realized when I looked it up that it also is quite important for biology. And this is a field that's concerned with the control and communication in the animal and the machine. So it's regulatory circular processes that happen both in physiological beings, so humans, but also in machines. And also is interesting for the fusion of human and machine in that sense, actually quite interesting for the biohacking that views the body as a machine. And what he says, Wiener, is we have modified our environment so radically that we must now modify ourselves to exist in this new environment, which again brings us back to some of the things we discussed already.
Absolutely.
Our bodies, our evolution has not kept step with the developments that we have in our environment, all the new technologies, all the different lifestyle modifications that we have that don't fit our ancient physiologies that are meant for something else.
As for the Wim Hof, I certainly wouldn't go down that path because it would mean instant heart attack for me and not controlling my physiology.
Yeah,
and quite to the contrary.
And indeed, this is a challenge with this method because there are some people who have died by exercising it, especially if you do this hyperventilation while in the water. There have been people who have drowned while doing that, which again is not that great. Even though there are in this case, so for many of the things we'll discuss today, there's absolutely no scientific evidence that it has a benefit for this technique that is being used, the combination of the breathing and the ice bathing. There seems to be some scientific evidence that it actually does have a benefit in credit of Wim Hof, who I still would not follow as my guru. But
okay. To
give him the benefit of the doubt, I think there is something to it, even though I don't want to try it.
Yeah. So let's check the lay of the land. I guess most people know a regimen of eat well, sleep well, exercise on a regular basis is a good measure. And B, have the experience that if they start the routine on January 1st, they are about to quit by mid-February probably.
Yeah, on January.
Roughly.
Mid-January
already.
It's often. So, I mean, the first 2 weeks in the gym are really bad always. The first 2 weeks of January, it's like so crowded and then goes down significantly towards the end of January. Yeah, I think, I mean, many of these things that we take as good New Year's or New Year's resolutions are not that long lasting. And this is a general problem with these short-term lifestyle modifications,
yeah,
such as any kind of diet. Most diets work for as long as you do them. If you stop them, they stop working and you will gain the weight back. And this is true for many of these positive things that you do. You need to do them basically for the rest of your life. That, of course, brings a challenge with it, because if you really want to have a better, healthier lifestyle, then these short-term measures might not do you any good and might indeed do you harm, because for many people, studies have shown that with each diet, you gain back a little more weight. Once you bounce back, this is the so-called yo-yo effect, and even jumping a little bit higher than
before.
From
bad to worse.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this might not be the solution that we're looking for. And maybe what we want to discuss today is, do we even have a problem that needs a solution? So do we need to be this new version of ourselves?
Exactly.
Or yeah, might it be that we can just stay the old version?
And I think this is one of the really fascinating aspects of today's show. And we'll get to that towards the end, to talk exactly about that. Why do we try in the first place? But for the time being, we'll discuss the hacks, of course, and what is happening while we speak. So it should be interesting to know more about the why fail, why do we want to change as discussed, why don't we succeed, and how do biohacking mechanisms help or don't help, do quite the opposite. And how massive do they enter the scene? I believe that it's a huge, massive business case, first of all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think biohacking, yeah, used to be, so we talked about it, I think, roughly 2 years ago. And it was still then a little bit more niche topic. But especially with the help of social media, but also with very popular podcasts like last episode we discussed, Andrew Huberman, the original bio bro who influences a lot of people in the way that they structure their day, what kind of supplements they take and everything else. So this idea of biohacking, so what does biohacking mean? It means that you somehow, as suggested also in the two quotes that I brought, hack your biology. So you influence your physiology by your own willpower to change your body. And this, of course, appears quite appealing to many people who want to become a better version of themselves. So there we have many, many different routes that this biohacking might take. And today we want to talk about the more, let's say, down to earth, more normal ones that are more through lifestyle, diet, exercise modifications. There are also people, and we talked about that in the past, and I think we'll talk about it again, who want to become cyborgs, put electronic devices into
implants,
their brains and bodies, mm-hmm, implants, people who perform genetic modifications on themselves, and even people who take a lot of prescription medicine that is not meant for them. So we'll steer clear of these more extreme cases for today and think a little bit about the regular biohacker, who is basically almost anyone today, because already counting your steps with your iPhone might be counted or might be seen as a mechanism of biohacking. So it involves any kind of diet that is very specific. So for example, leaving out complete food groups or having very specific eating regimens, for example, doing interval fasting, having deprivation diets where you have like these almost starvation events within the,
yeah,
diet. You have, again, like specific exercise routines, high intensity, low intensity, whatever it needs. There is often some practice of meditation, of mindfulness, of some kind of do-it-yourself cognitive behavioral therapy involved. There is a lot of supplement taking and medication taking involved. And there are also other things like, for example, having specific light routines. So this is also very common for people to only, for example, Huberman suggests having direct exposure to daylight early in the morning. So you need to go out and look at the sky for 10 minutes. Or other people suggest have specific glasses to not be exposed to blue light, which indeed is shown not to be great to fall asleep. So if you look at your phone a lot before you go to bed, the light is bad for going to sleep. Also, what you do on your phone is probably not helpful. But there is many different practices for this biohacking. The whole goal of it, of course, is on the one hand to be this better version of yourself. So to be more fit, to be less stressed, to look better, to feel better, and to perform better. So all these things are, of course, our goals. So we try to hack our biology to attain those goals.
So let's have a closer look at two groups or two classes. By the way, if I want to check my step count for the day, I have to look into the blue light just before going to bed.
Yeah.
So that's a problem within itself. Let's talk about those two aspects. The supplements first, we've been talking about that. It doesn't make so much sense to digest a pound of vitamin C per day or so. It doesn't make you better or so. And then on the other hand, the technical devices that you already hinted to. But if we look at the, we might call it non-prescription medication, is there anything that makes sense? Or is it at the end of the day, if I want to, for instance, if I want to lose weight, it's going to be Ozempic? Don't sing the song.
Ozempic. So Ozempic, by the way, has exactly the
same. And they don't pay us, by the
no,
way.
No, they don't.
No, they
we just
don't.
Really
yeah.
like the song.
Disclaimer.
Disclaimer. I mean, Ozempic has the same problem as diets, that you need to take it
lifelong.
Well, I mean, if you don't want to. And I'm not saying there are no people who benefit from a diet or from Ozempic and then manage to keep the weight off. But for most people, it has been shown that it doesn't really work. Supplements in general are not needed. This again goes along those lines of fixing a problem that we don't have, because we get enough of vitamins, of minerals, of nutrients through our diet. And this is not only for people who have like super specific vegan, super healthy diets. This is true for the average person who just eats normal, let's put it like that. It includes eating some vegetable and fruit, eating some protein, getting some carbs and some fats. So it doesn't work if you only eat frozen pizza.
That's good.
This
mm-hmm.
is very clear. Or if you only eat processed food, this logic does not apply. But if you eat like the regular person, a balanced and kind of like various diet, then you just get enough of all the things that you need. So there is no need to take extra supplements. There was a huge study published in 2023 where they looked, I think, at almost 70,000 patients who took vitamin supplements, and they showed very little, if no, benefit on overall health, on cardiovascular health, on longevity, which anyways is a little bit difficult measure. We talked about it because, I mean, the ultimate measurement of longevity is longevity, which takes a very long time to measure. So in general, there is some case to be made, I think, for vitamin D in the winter when you don't get a lot of sunlight, and for people who have specific deficiencies or people who have specific diets, for example, for people who are vegans, it might be that it can be helpful to take certain supplements. But in general, on the average, we do not need them, which also means that we're putting something in our body that it needs to deal with, which might not have a positive effect. That also means that if you overload on these things that you don't need, you're actually stressing out your excretory organs, you're stressing out your kidneys, and you're stressing out your liver, mm-hmm. who do not need these things, but need to get rid of them. And if you take them in excess, and especially if you take many of those on top of one another, this can actually get harmful. There is two other things to it. Of course, these supplements might interact, for example, with medication that you're already taking, for example, contraceptives or antidepressants or statins or something that are like common medication that you take for chronic conditions. And here, these interactions might, on the one hand, lead to adverse events, or on the other hand, to this medication not working properly anymore because of these interactions. So the enzymes that interact with drugs, they might become, let's say, like confused by the overload of things that they have to deal with. It's a very like simplified way to put it, but it's just an overload. There's also another challenge to that, because most supplements are not regulated. So it means you don't need to go to the pharmacy to buy them. You can just go somewhere to a regular shop and say, like, I'm buying that. But that also means that often they don't contain the correct amounts. So you might actually have much higher or much lower concentration of what it is supposed to be. And also you don't have the guidance yet that you would have if you consult a doctor or even a pharmacist, because you're just taking something. And this is also one of these really innate principles of biohacking that we know our bodies best. We are in charge. It's this libertarian idea. I know what's best for me, which is not necessarily true. It's just maybe a feeling we might have, but why would it be best for us just because we get the feeling that we need to take all these things? Even, I mean, I think for most vitamins, in general, they're not harmful if we don't take them in excess. There's this famous example of Nobel Prize winner Linus Pauling, who was really like a brilliant scientist, but in later years became hardcore advocate for vitamin C taking, and he took like massive doses of vitamin C every day and tried to really make a case why that would prevent cancer and common cold, but it just could not be shown. And probably is just not very nice for your stomach, might even lead to ulcers or something if you just overload on vitamin C every day. But there are also other supplements that are, for example, melatonin to sleep. There's collagen that apparently, I don't think the scientific evidence
makes
is conclusive.
Skin.
Exactly, makes your skin more firm. Mm-hmm. So all these things. But the problem is that there is overall, for most of them, scientific evidence lacking that they really have the desired benefit. So there are exceptions of supplements here and there that do seem to have the effect. But even then, it's again the question, do we need them? So I have the example presentation of one of my students, shout out if you're listening, who introduced the concept of creatine taking, which he's a personal trainer, and it seems to be really helpful for building muscle and building endurance. And I looked at the literature and, okay, I have to say to me that looked like one of the supplements where I could not find like the bigger flaws. But then again, if I'm not like an athlete, a football player, whatever, I go running, I go to the gym a little bit, I go a little bit like, hiking.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
And then I was wondering, why do I actually need to build muscle?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't. So
maybe you don't.
Maybe I don't.
Yes.
And then that again brings me back to the question, do we need to fix something that is not broken?
We'll get to that in a minute, but of course, we have to talk about the digital age, and among other digital addictions, one could be called the urge to measure what's going on with our bodies. I mean, while our ancestors, until very, very recently, did not have a clue what their heart rate was or blood pressure was at a certain time of the day and wouldn't have called it meaningful to count daily steps, we look at it as smart, after the corresponding devices, of course. What are the current trends there, and are there any that have meaning, and as we are speaking about New Year resolutions, make sense?
Yeah, I think in general, it has been shown that the tracking of movement, so the step counting, is beneficial for most people to just move more because it's a very quick check-in that shows you that you should move more. And it seems to be an intrinsic reward system that gets you to exercise just a little bit more. And I would say
that. And I can affirm every once in a while I check that and say, okay, it's only 3,000 steps today. What's going on? So that's not sufficient.
Yeah, exactly. So I think here this is something where it's a little, I would say, hard to find a flaw with it. But there are other measurements which are, in my mind, a little bit trickier. Sleep quality measurement. I think as someone who sometimes sleeps pretty badly, and I know why I sleep badly, because I'm stressed, but in that moment, I cannot really do a lot about it. Knowing that I sleep badly does not help. I have to say, I do not need my Apple Watch to tell me that I sleep badly. I actually, then I just sleep worse. And I think this is true also for general. These stress measurements can be helpful, partly, but they can only be helpful if you also have an instrument to do something about it in that moment. So if you have the chance to actually make a meaningful change about the thing that you're measuring. And therefore, the step count, as simple as it is a good measure because you have a very simple solution, walk more. For other things, some people, I think, see it as something very positive. For example, also the stress measurement with watches like Apple Watch or Garmin or similar devices that tell you you're stressed right now. If you then have the capacity to do something about it, this is great. But if you don't, you will just get more stressed, and this is not beneficial. The more advanced types of measurements are, for example, blood sugar measurements that people do, which again can, of course, be helpful to know if you're eating the right types of foods. But then again, if you're not a diabetic, maybe also it's fine not to constantly know your blood sugar level, because then you might never enjoy a cookie again. Or
true.
It mm-hmm. might get very hard. So again, bringing this back to maybe... It's a little bit funny because on the one hand, you have in this biohacking community, or I mean, biohacking sounds now very, again, niche, but I think it's a lot of people who are now buying into this trend of self-optimization by biological means.
Oh, yes, of course.
I think here it's really this idea that you can control your body, but at the same time, you find it very hard to listen to your body. You become a little bit alienated because you put all the technology in between you and your feelings. And I think, for example, this idea of measuring blood sugar, again, if you're at risk of developing diabetes, or if you have like other very specific conditions, or you really need to track your diet for some reason, that might be a good idea. But if you're just a regular person, you will also know if you're full, and you will probably also feel in your body if you ate too much sugar. So this, again, it's a little bit of a disconnect here. Yeah. So it's just the question, do we need it?
Absolutely. And speaks volumes again to what we do is not happening and defined in the frontal cortex. Not even mainly, right?
No, I think the frontal...
The decision-making I'm talking about.
I think the frontal cortex in the end puts meaning to it. So the decision is already being made, but then our frontal cortex tells us why we made the decision that we had made without its involvement, kind of. I hope this is very simplified. Brain scientists, you can write to me and tell me how it really works. But I think in simplified terms, this is unfortunately how it works. We are not only not in charge of our physiology, we're actually also less in charge of our minds than we think.
And oh, yes.
Acknowledging mm-hmm. this, I think, can be helpful to be a little bit kinder to ourselves. Yeah. Because this, for me, the main challenge with the biohacking practice is that it lacks self-compassion and kindness, because you're constantly punishing yourself with something that you don't want.
Ice water, near starving events.
Exactly. And then, I mean, we didn't...
Drugs.
Yeah, but what we didn't talk about are these cognitive behavioral therapy and meditation practices, which mm-hmm. again, if they're supervised properly and if you're in the right state of mind, can be extremely helpful, and they can be also quite harmful. And I think this is something that we haven't been told for a long time, because for these kind of meditation practices, it was always said, yeah, mindfulness is great, meditation is great, it's always the right thing to do. And it's not. And there are many people who report that, and they are actually, especially if you have these long-term silent meditation events, and this also is the same as this supposed dopamine fast that was very popular a couple of years ago. Now we have the cortisol detox, another BS term, but we talked about it
there
last.
There are many out there, increasingly so.
Exactly. But I think the problem with this complete sensory deprivation that you get there is that for some people it can actually induce psychosis. And I mean, you want to do something good for yourself, but you're actually making yourself, I mean, there is a reason why prisoners are put into solitary confinement and why this is such a big deal and considered a violation of human rights, because this is really bad for the human mind to have a stimulus-free environment where you're left alone with your thoughts. And if you're not doing very well mentally, and then you do that and you don't get the right mental health supervision, this can be harmful for many people. And you don't need to develop a psychosis. You can also just have a very bad experience. And the problem with all these practices, also with these like very extreme diets, there was this famous example of the basic diet. So where you only were you anti-acidic foods, that was very popular at some point, where you got a lot of like green smoothie type of drinks. The problem with these kind of very rigorous programs is that the solution is always the program. And if you're suffering, then you're not doing the program right. You start fixing a problem that might not be broken or that might need real help. And then you start self-medicating, putting yourself through therapy without the proper means, the proper instruments.
Absolutely.
And this can, even if it's not involving illegal drugs or anything crazy, even if it's really just being in silent for too long or only drinking juice for too long, can actually be quite harmful to your mind and bodily health. And this is something that we need to consider, that just because it doesn't appear extreme on first glance, it might still have pretty severe effects on our well-being, and that we should consider if it's the right thing to do, if we don't need it.
Big, big exclamation mark here, because many current developments we laugh about sitting at this table in this show. And please, listeners, forgive us, but we seem to be rational people who tend to regard certain developments as laughable. And so we just do, because we think it's funny if somebody eats supplements all day or jumps into ice water three times a day
The supplements I don't find so funny, but there's the thing called a coffee enema where you should coffee up your butt instead of drinking it. That one I find very funny.
Oh my good God, uh-huh. Yes. Mm-hmm. Terrible. Okay. By the way, did you ever try a diet? I did.
I,
in my mid-20s or so, was very disappointed.
Yeah, I did diets from the age of 14 until last year. And then I decided that I will never diet again. And since then, I'm weighing a little bit less and I'm a lot happier.
No more. We shouldn't have scales in our houses.
Yeah, I also don't use the scale. Yeah. Or like very rarely, because it's just... That's the thing, that's again this measurement, and it's a simplified way to say that, because again, if you have a disconnect from your physiology somehow, then you need this measurement to be able to do something about it. So, for example, I mean, the step count, I think for many people, they don't know how many steps they would walk. They feel like I'm moving a lot. And then if you look at it at the end of the day, you might have not moved at all.
Yeah.
So in this case, it might be quite helpful to have this kind of check-in. The same if you're slowly, slowly gaining weight and you don't want to accept it, then maybe weighing yourself is a very good idea. But at the same time, I mean, this can become a self-serving purpose, which... at least for me, does not make my life better. And also, like, I mean, for like weight, I think you have this very simple measurement. Do your clothes still fit?
Yeah,
if they don't, then you might have gained weight.
And again, another disclaimer. I mean, we're talking about the normal people, not those who are really obese or something. Yeah. That's a different topic. We're talking about those who maybe have in a range of 5, 10, 15 pounds too much, and in the summertime when they move more, they lose that kind of weight anyways again.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, I mean, for obesity, I mean, this is still, even if people don't want to accept it, I mean, it's a pathology, which is, of course, difficult to accept because it's very lifestyle related. And this is true for any kind of also substance abuse, where this tenor was, yeah, but why don't you just behave smarter? I mean, why don't you just eat less? Why don't you just not do drugs like Nancy Reagan? Just don't do it. But I mean, it's not so easy. And it's, of course, shaped very much by your environment that you grow up in. If you have like healthy food available, if you have drugs or alcohol or something available in your close vicinity, I mean, the likelihood of falling into these traps, of course, increases. But there's also a personality question, that some people just have more addictive personalities. And for metabolism, some people just don't metabolize in the same way or don't have the same satiation signaling. So in these cases, the problem is that still here, diets don't really help. It doesn't really matter if you want to lose 300 pounds.
Right.
It's still this problem of the short-term effects. So here, really, I think what you need is to modify your lifestyle, but this is easier said than done, because usually the lifestyle that you have is a product of your environment. And here, I think for me, this problem with the short-term goals is that it might make it even harder to change your lifestyle, because you set completely unrealistic goals on a short term, or maybe attainable goals, but you can only attain them for maybe 3-4 months, because you're only looking forward for this horrible period to end where you don't have to do this thing anymore. And once you're done with it, then you're done with it. And then you bounce back to where you were. And I mean, if you are a person who loves ice bathing, and I know some people, I mean, I also like to sometimes be in cold water, but I also know some people who go swimming every day in a cold lake in Berlin and they love it. So if this is something...
In the wintertime,
if this is something that you can enjoy, then of course this is a great idea for you. Or if you are someone who doesn't like need to eat regularly and enjoys interval fasting, this might be the right thing for you. But I think it really depends very much on your physiology and also on your lifestyle, if this is something that you can implement. And having this like extreme short-term measures just doesn't really seem to make so much sense. And there, I mean, on social media, you have all these advertisements like disappear for 2 months and come back as a new person. Yeah, but it's true. They really say that. And it's like cortisol detox or diet or like read a couple of self-help books and then you will be very smart. Or I don't know what kind of, there's also this like man, I don't know, man living together somewhere in the jungle, only eating meat and not getting distracted by women kind of bio bro mentality. We do sports and then we talk about stuff and yeah. So, I mean, again, this works on a short term, and maybe if you're not into vegetables and women, that's a great idea to just live with other guys and eat meat in the jungle. But again, I mean, it doesn't feel sustainable. And taking yourself, we discussed that last episode for the cortisol detox, taking yourself out of society for many people is not an option. So we are stuck with our lifestyles. We are stuck with social media. We are stuck with all this changed environment that Wiener says in his quote. So we need to somehow adapt to it. This is absolutely true. But I think we need to also do it in a way that doesn't make ourselves feel very unhappy while we do it. And this can be very personal. Again, if you're into painful things, or if you're, for example, someone who can sit for a long time in silence, for example, my husband, he's pretty good with being alone with his own thoughts for a long time. Probably he just meditates without knowing that he meditates, or without intentionally meditating.
Beautiful. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But for most people, being alone with their thoughts is absolutely terrifying. Mm. And so different things work differently for different people. Yeah. And doing the things that other people say is right. And this is something that all this also social media craze, like this is the secret they have been hiding from us for a long time. If you only take this supplement, you will always sleep 8 hours. If you only do this diet, you will never gain weight again. And I mean, this
sales pitches.
Exactly. And but this also puts up this kind of conspiracy theory vibes or conspiracy tale vibes that, I mean, who is keeping all these secrets from us? That would improve our lives so much if we would only
follow
them.
Bill Gates or the government?
Both, yes.
Oh, both, okay.
Yes. No. No, but now it must be Elon Musk, right?
True, yeah, absolutely. Easy. We covered a lot of ground, but the crucial question remains, why the heck are we doing all this as humans, punishing ourselves each new year?
Yeah, and this is a really interesting question. And this is completely my philosophy or my thinking now. So this is not any proven thing, but I still feel like this might be the reason. I mean, there are multiple reasons. And one of them is, of course, a societal pressure to constantly improve ourselves, because we hear that all the time, even before social media, living our best lives, being the best version of ourselves. And I mean, diets have been thriving not since this century, but since the time of the ancient Greeks. So adhering to standards of beauty, standards of well-being, health is a high good. Mm-hmm. Health is seen as an achievement. Not being healthy in many respects is also seen by society as a sort of failure. I mean, there is, and I think this is a little bit this Calvinist thinking behind it, that it's your fault if you're not healthy, because you should have done differently. You should have not eaten so much. You should have not smoked. You should have walked more. You should have gone to the doctor more regularly. Should have not done all these bad things. Mm-hmm. This is a very common impulse if someone has any kind of sickness that has any cause that is non-genetic, let's put it like that, that people put a certain level of blame on the person, which is
absolutely
very unfortunate. And I think it's, in my mind, not the right way to go, because if we go down these lines, we're easily also punishing. I mean, would you withhold healthcare from someone who doesn't follow all the right rules? This is a really scary thought, but there are thoughts around this.
Like, I know. Mm.
And in my mind, this is not the right way to go. At the same time, I think promoting healthy behaviors is really, I mean, all what I'm saying does not mean that I don't want people to be as healthy as possible. I'm just questioning the measures that are being taken and punishing someone. So there is a clear link between smoking and lung cancer. And people know that. Mm-hmm. And they still smoke. And it's fine. And I would not put blame on that, because I think it's already punishment enough, except for someone coming from the outside and saying, you're doing wrong. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, everyone who does certain unhealthy things knows that, right?
Absolutely.
I drink wine, and I know that it might be healthier not to do it, and I still do it.
Right.
I mean, not in excess, but still. So, I mean, clearly it would be better to not do it. Or I did a lot of sunbathing when I was younger. Clearly, my wrinkles show that I shouldn't have done it. I did it. Anyways, so this is the one layer. This is the societal layer. Again, I think massively amplified by social media, unpleasantly amplified by social media, constantly telling you you need to do something because you're the way you are is wrong. But I think the other layer is on a personal level. And I'm really wondering why people, and I think this is especially in men common, this need for control. And this, again, brings you back to this, you can rule your physiology. And also a little bit to this cybernetics thing that I didn't know about, but this intersection between machine and human, because you want to turn your body into a machine. You want to be able to hack your body in a way that is easy, that's straightforward, and that's measurable, because you connect all these electronic devices to measure the success of your hacking. And the problem is that this does not work in my mind, because we are still humans, and being human is very messy. And I think what underlies this need for control is really the ultimate fear of the human condition of being afraid of being human, because it often, I mean, we have this idea that we're like the best possible evolved version, but many things that we evolved into don't make a lot of sense. And many things that we have, like these stress responses to non-relevant stressors like emails, phone calls, whatever, social anxiety, existential threat, I mean, dread, all these things. This is not, it's not nice to have. It's not nice to be human many, many moments of your life. It actually sucks a little bit to be human often. And the idea that if you just control your physiology, and if you control your mind by dopamine fasting, by meditating, if you control your body, if you control everything, you get rid of all these humanness that is so unpredictable and so terrifying. I think this might be a reason why people try to control their bodies so much. Mm-hmm. And I think the ultimate goal, of course, is longevity. And again, I mean, this is also a big part of being human, is that you will get old and we will get sick and you will die. And this sucks, of course.
Of course it does, yes.
And the idea that we can somehow control that is great. So I understand where it might come from. The only problem is that in the end, it doesn't work, right? Because we will remain human and we will still have all these terrible things that happen to us. Like we need to write an email, even though we're very stressed about it. And we need to go to an event where we need to talk to strangers. And it's like absolutely stressful and anxiety inducing. And all these things will happen and we will age and the bodies will fail slowly. And accepting this, in my mind, is more helpful than trying to prevent it. But this is just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, and I believe it's an act of reason. It's an act of keeping up the knowledge of the era of enlightenment in a way, which we seem to distance ourselves from increasingly through many aspects you just mentioned. Common sense at the end of the day. So that might be a good idea, especially for the new year. Thank you, Izzy. Yeah,
thank you. And I would maybe say that what could be more helpful than trying to hack yourself is show a little bit more compassion for yourself in all the flaws that you have, because maybe they will not turn out to be as flawed as might appear on the surface.
Beautiful remark, and subscribe to that very, very much. Thank you all for listening. Happy, healthy new year to all of you. Not maybe associated to ultimate self-improvement, but self-love, as we just said. Wonderful. How do you like our show? Please leave a comment, subscribe to We're Doomed, We're Saved. Tell us about the bi-revolution topics you want us to cover in 2025. And again, stay healthy, stay optimistic.
Thank you.